For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So, it's kind of a miracle that the Dharma flourishes in these times. But clearly it does. We're doing this thing called Zazen, sitting together, rooted in the vow to benefit this world, despite all odds. That's how it feels to me sometimes. But we carry on a tradition. Today is the birthday of Dogen Zenji. Well, let's say Dogen was born on January 26th, 825 years ago. So either a Methuselah or a corpse. But, you know, we just honor this great ancestor, the founder of Soto Zen in Japan, born in Kyoto. And this is our family style of practice, Soto Zen. Dogen passed along, Suzuki Roshi passed along, and we're finding how this works in this time and place. I know there are quite a few troubles in Dogen's time, and there still are in ours. So our practice is just to continue and turn the wheels of Buddha, awakening, Dharma, the teaching of reality, and Sangha, community, in this world. So happy birthday, Dogen. He's on the altar. Some of you might know this, but today a group of people, I think a total of 17 or so, have been sitting Zazen in an extended period of meditation or day of meditation called Sesshin, collecting, gathering the heart mind together. So you'll be sad to know we don't have temple cleaning after Zazen, after Dharma talk, or tea. Although I'm sure our Tenzo, if you ask for some tea, would help you out. But so we'll end for the public who are not participating in the Sesshin, in bodily participating. We'll, after the Dharma talk, we'll end the normal Sunday program. And just to encourage everyone a little, you know, this day of Zazen is such a precious opportunity to energize our practice and deepen our meditation, our Zazen. And we will, over the next year, continue having monthly opportunities for Sesshin. And all are welcome for any part of the day or days, in person and online. So for the first several months of this year, I sort of decided I want to focus on the renewal of Zazen and grounding in the basics of diligent, wholehearted practice. You know, when times are rough, practice more. That may seem really strange, you know, and maybe severe, but I don't mean a severe practice. I mean an open, spacious, devoted, diligent practice. So in Zazen, we develop this body, this Zazen body of practice. The fruit of this practice is a warm-hearted body. Warm-hearted, inclusive body of wholeness. And as I said a few weeks ago, the breath the heart, the body, and the mind are the basics of Zazen. And I hope it's okay with you if I return to talking about exploring the breath in our sitting meditation. You know, I feel like somebody's going to have, you know, like they'd had the hook to pull somebody off the stage. It's like, enough of that breath, Hogetsu. But what can I say? Breath is a teacher and a refuge. Breath is awakening with all beings. We're all breathing together. Even if other beings might be breathing sulfur or some other kind of substance, you know, the universe is breathing with us. And in the midst of this, I really want to acknowledge that this week has been painful, sad, threatening, difficult for many of us. And so in talking about the breath, I really hope that when you find yourself facing anger, fear, distress, or anything difficult, that connecting to your breath and your life force will bring some relief and ease. It's okay to be at ease and even wholesomely joyful in the midst of a complete horrible mess, in the midst of grief, in the midst of dualistic, destructive nonsense. So I think that if we're meeting these moments, that we want to be as grounded and spacious and as relaxed and settled as possible. That connecting to your life force, which is our breath, will bring some comfort and snap us back to reality, we might say. You know, a settled, concentrated, non-distracted body and mind, and mind includes the heart in this practice, you know, helps us encourages us to know how to show up fully to the present moment with clarity and compassion. So this is not a space out practice. This is a practice of clarity. But also first of kindness and compassion. You know, when you meet a raging maniac with softness, you know how to move to get out of the way. I mean, Paul's a martial artist. You know when to punch and when to pull back, right? And let the other person's momentum do its thing. But to have that kind of wisdom is difficult and takes a lot of work. But I think maybe the easiest place to access it is with our breath. You know, I want to thank again Mark Splitt, who's here, for nudging me along the breath awareness track. And also Thursday morning group. There's a Thursday morning group that meets every week. And they've been putting up with me talking about the breath and have made really great comments. So I want to thank so many of you are here. So thank you, Thursday morning people. Thank you to everyone, of course, for breathing together. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I mentioned this last time. Of course, everybody knows that in almost all spiritual traditions that the breath has been an important part of practice for humans for thousands of years. Even this Latin word of spirit means breath or life force. So I'm told. And there's all sorts of things you can, quote, do with the breath. You know, I don't know, these wild, like, fire breathing and, you know, Tummo, these practices of generating, like, body heat in the midst of cold. There's holding the breath. There's, like, free diving. You know, there's all these sorts of things one can do with the breath. But to really trust the breath and allow the breath to nourish us is a little more difficult. You know, it seems so simple. Just breathe. The minute you start paying attention to something, you kind of mess it up. I think that's one of the laws of science, too. If you observe something, you change it immediately. So this is real, it's kind of a tricky thing, which is why I'm harping on it so much. You know, but when our breath will teach us, even when we notice the quality of it, we notice how the state of our nervous system, of our physiology, and we learn what regulates our physiology. You know, if you're upset and you don't breathe, you'll pass out eventually. So respiration is essential to Zazen and essential to life. How could it be otherwise? Like, what about Zazen? If Zazen was counter to life, it would be a weird thing. So this is life-affirming practice. And connecting to and caring for our life force is essential in Zazen. And in Zazen, breath is liberated, freed, not controlled. You know, when we completely and, I would even say diligently, trust the breath, we learn how to trust our bodies, our hearts, and how to trust the world to be as it is. A lot of times we're kind of bargaining with the world, like, oh, it's not really that way. It's the way I think it should be, or it's the way I'm afraid it is. But to see things as they are, you first can learn that just by seeing the breath as it really is. That in of itself is pretty good. Most everyone here. Rob, is this your first time here?
No, it is not. Although I was here, I visited you in like 2020, so that was a while ago.
Mm. In a different location. In this space?
No, on Irving.
On Irving, right before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right before.
So you've done a little Zazen before?
A little. Yeah, I've been practicing for like 25 years.
Oh, good. Yeah. So you may know some of these things, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page in terms of everybody's had kind of basic Zazen instruction. Settle the body. Sit upright. Hands in mudra. Seal your position. Gaze softly. And the other instruction is breathe naturally through your nose. And then be present with whatever arises. Easier said than done. And, but we begin with this simple awareness of the breath and bringing a light attention to the inhalation and exhalation. Sometimes in our family style of Soto Zen in America, people might suggest that you follow the breath or count the inhalations and exhalations. You know, like after you settle into meditation posture, breathe through your nose, and then just experience the cessation of breathing. Sometimes people say do this counting the breath practice or counting the breath, where you count each exhalation. Inhale, exhalation, one. Exhalation two, up to 10, if you can get there. Then you go back to one again. If you can't get to 10, go back to one. I think everybody kind of familiar with this, is that right? Yeah. So now that you're all familiar with that, I'd like us to engage in a little bit of breath meditation, but first I'm going to offer a few cues of breath counting. So when you settle into a little breath counting, start to notice some things, you know, like pay attention to your awareness. Is the breath liberated from your grasping and control? Or is there still a little subtle effort to control it? Some of us might have noticed this in Kinhin. I said, have your steps follow your breath, you know? But sometimes, I don't know, I was noticing that sometimes I wanted to pick up my foot before I was inhaling. Just slightly, you know, rush a little bit. But actually to really get into groove with your breath. So notice that. Is there an effort to control the breath or force the breath into counting? If you lose count when you're counting the breath, how did that happen? Really explore that. Notice it each time if it happens. If it doesn't, notice how that happened. What was your quality and state of mind that led to one direction or the other? And you can explore, even with this practice of noticing the difference between control and trust. So maybe we'll do a few minutes of this count the breath. And up for it? So get in your Zazen position or whatever is comfortable enough that you can breathe freely. Now find a stable, balanced Zazen position. And allow your gaze to soften and your breath to be natural. And establish a kind of mindful awareness in the present moment. Allow gravity to support you. And maybe your breath could flow from your lower abdomen, but not necessary. Just let it be natural. And then you'll observe quietly a natural inhale. Really, Zen is about doing nothing. So see if you can do nothing with your inhale. And then with your exhale, just as the exhale proceeds, silently count one to yourself. And then observe quietly the next inhale. And when exhaling, count two silently to yourself. On like that, naturally, inhale and count on each exhale until you reach 10. And if you've repeated 10 cycles, if you've gotten all the way up to 10, go back. And then if you haven't, great. Just go back to one if you lose count. But again, keep some of these little prompts for awareness of paying attention to how you pay attention, of the quality of your breath and body as something that is being controlled or contracted or open and trusting, whether your concentration is alert and aware or distracted or spaced out, those kinds of things. Difference between control and trust. So our Dawan could ring a bell 3 times to start, and then why don't you time 3 minutes if you can? And just at will begin, David. Oh, well, 3 minutes. So, I just want to check in. Anybody have any reflections on this before I blab further? Did you know how many cycles you got through? David?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I find I have a tendency, I could really fill my lungs, and that feels good.
Yeah.
It's connected. And sometimes I'll just release the breath very quickly. Mm-hmm. And when I'm finding myself now, today, I've been concentrating on also letting go of my breath slowly. And instead of just going, mm-hmm. you know, going more. More slowly, you know. Mm-hmm. That way. Now, how does that fit into our, you know, is that something that is too controlled for our practice? Is it, or is
there any control there?
Sometimes there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
We all do this. So that's controlled. That's the definition of control. So liberate it. Let it go. Just let the breath do what it will do. I guarantee mm-hmm. you to trust it. Now, at other times when you're not doing this particular thing, of course, you know, deep a deep breath, you know, exhale fully or let be slow. You know, these have their utility. But what is it like to liberate it? To really, like, not even have a thought about what you want it to do. You know, like a child. You know, sometimes when you're with a baby or a child and you just want to see what they're going to do. You're not trying to corral them or force them to do something. I mean, until they want to go over the cliff. So if your breath wants to stop breathing, you'll probably want to help it wake up. But, yeah. But you can notice there's a tendency to want to explore those things. But the concentration is, can I just really see if I can surrender a little bit of that control? And what happens if you do that? Because for some of us, you know, surrendering a little bit is extremely frightening. So back off then. Anything else? Online? Jerry Bodhisattva.
I notice when I really can count mm-hmm. to 10, mm-hmm. that time goes real quick.
Oh. Mm. Joe's nodding his head, noticed that too. So you're not tracking time.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wow, the bell rang already?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Anything else? And some of you are like, I hate this. That's not Zen. It's not what Soto Zen teaches. David Ray.
I mean, it's kind of why I'm here. It's kind of what got me here. You know, so I had done breath counting for some number of years, and that's why I washed ashore here. And so, since this time that you've been talking, or you know, talking about breath counting, I was doing something different. And I thought it was, you know, no concentration, but that's not true. What I've been using for concentration has been sense impressions, mostly sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm aware of now is that now that I'm returning to counting breaths, I have more. I think I have a lot more awareness of what's around me, especially
mm-hmm.
sounds, than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it really feels like an object. It's just there.
Mm. Nice. Yes, you did a lot of breath counting, but you're seeing the breath counting sharpens a kind of samadhi that then extends out. So when you first practice this, you can be really narrow on like one, two. But then once the counting, you could say, or the attentionality, the concentration develops, it then you naturally flow outward. I think last time I spoke about this in here, few weeks ago, Douglas mentioned that. And all of a sudden, the counting drops off. And this kind of more spacious awareness can happen. Not that you're trying to grab for it, but you can test yourself, you know, if you're concentrated or not. You know, if you can count to 10 and develop that much concentration, that's pretty good. But if you're like, I don't need this, then try to concentrate a little bit on the breath. But yeah, so your sense gates should be open, not contracted. But at first, you kind of, there is a little bit of focus, which doesn't have to be contraction. Matthew, did you want to offer something?
I was mostly scratching my ear for that.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
It's been an interesting exercise because I remember starting how hard counting the breath was, you know, a couple of years back. And so the past couple talks, it's been a kind of a fun experiment. And, this is very different now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I don't say, you know, 7, 23 times in my head. It's actually different. So.
You can actually get to 10.
Yeah. And then again.
Yeah. And then you'll be like, I got to 10 three times in 3 minutes or 2.5 times. Yeah. So this is developing awareness and paying attention to what's going on. And actually, I don't want to give you like something to grab onto, but I will say that we do learn some things when you sit over time. It takes a long time, maybe. You've been sitting for quite a few years. And, you know, it's good to remind yourself of like, and then you learn something more, you know, like you can let the counting go, just flow with the breath. The breath flows, you know, from a place of calmness and clarity. And then we can meet the flux of the world unhindered by this dualistic comparing mind, unhindered by craving for more or less, you know. Like we can appreciate the breath. Like I'm happy that breath is arising and ceasing and arising. It's okay if you notice the quality of your mind is bright and concentrated. You can't hold on to it because our minds won't always be that way. But sometimes the breath can help us kind of strike the note, like a tuning fork or something. And you notice a somatic release of contraction. And this liberated breath connects us to reality and trains us. You know, we can be intimate with our breath in a way that we develop this knack, you know, this kind of snappy knack of, you know, training the mind. That's what Buddha said, right? We train the mind. Because our mind, as if you haven't noticed, at least I've noticed, my mind is wild. It can go wild. And then we're not charmed, as the Buddha said, not charmed by desire. You know, we have the knack of responding to changing conditions. And breath can teach us how to set the ego aside, the little ego puppy sit in our lap. Yep. We're like, one. Let's breathe together. Do you ever do that? Breathe with a child or baby against your chest. Match your breathing to them. It's really beautiful. So our breath connects us to the world, to the winds of the world. We sway the waves of the world like bamboo or like a wind bell. You know, not separate from the conditions of the present moment. And when the breath is liberated, the body is this wind bell. Like David Ray noticed, you know, opening, responding, you know, not just shutting out the things of this world, but swaying and opening and responding to them. You know, in honor of Dogen, I'll read a little Windbell poem that was allegedly composed by his teacher, Dogen's Chinese teacher. And it says something like, the whole body, a mouth, hanging in emptiness, whole mouth hanging in space. Or the whole body, this is my editorialization, the whole body breathes boundlessness. The second line of the poem, not caring which way the wind blows, east, west, north, or south. This doesn't mean that we're insensitive or even more sensitive, but we see reality, things as they are, without our judgment and control. Like when the wind blows, the Santa Ana winds, you respond to them. Not like, I don't like these winds, so I'm going to fight with them. It's like, what do I do? How do I live in the midst of wind and fire? Not caring which way the wind blows. All day long, this wind bell sings Prajna Paramita for all beings. So our breath, liberated breath and body, flows with conditions and sings peace, the wisdom of peace and justice. Ting tong, ting tong. It tinkles, a sweet sound. This is the body. I was noticing, I was watching a Tibetan teacher and they sway when they talk, you know, in Zen we're kind of rigid. But I'm like, oh, I can see why they're doing that. It feels so good to just breathe and sway with the energy of this world. So this breath, the concentration and the awareness and the open-heartedness, wholeheartedness, the liberated breath teaches us to flow and respond and teaches us non-separation. So you start to follow your breath, where does it begin and end? We're not zombies. We are alive in our practice. I think Teigen says that a lot, right? We're alive or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but it is true. So the breath is your life. I'll share something that a good friend of mine, a Zen priest, shared a haiku that she wrote. And somehow it inspired this whole talk, even though I don't know how it's related. But it's really wonderful to have good friends, which is what we are. And I'm really grateful for my friend. And she said, could I share a haiku with you? Would that be okay? Like, bring it on, please. Mm-hmm. And she's someone who has hearing issues and is often pretty isolated because of that. But this was her haiku. Moment by moment, waves of life wash me away. No place to settle. Moment by moment, breath by breath, waves of life wash me away. Wash away this separate, dualistic self. No place to settle. So nothing to hold on to. So don't hold on to your breath. Each breath moment responds to the waves of life. And we're surfing some pretty tsunami-like waves, as far as I can tell right now. Waves of hatred and convulsion. But we have to be careful how we can meet these moments and not be unbalanced, and our breath helps us. Diligent, joyful attention to the breath teaches calm, it teaches concentration, it teaches equanimity and acceptance. Accept a short breath, accept shallow breath, accept the exhalation and inhalation. It teaches flexibility. Our breath is very flexible. And it teaches a wise response. And I think when you learn to free the breath, this is a big step on the path of freeing all beings from unnecessary suffering. So don't take the breath for granted. Don't ignore the breath. You know, it's always available until it's not. So I just want to encourage an appreciation and a practice in this way. And I think it's great to have a grounding practice. So thank you all very much for listening to me. And I would love to listen to you. My little wind bells tinkle away. Really? Does anyone have something to offer?
Howard does.
I can't. Mm-hmm. Ah, Howard Bodhisattva.
Thank you for this talk, Obetsu. I also started with breath counting in a different tradition. That tradition also involved a lot of prostrations.
Yeah.
Really fast, heavy prostrations all the way to the ground, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. You really pay attention to your breath, right?
Mm.
And I, over time, switching to more sort of strictly Zazen. Right? That's faded away a bit, but it comes in and out. It's sort of like relationship to like objects.
Mm.
Whether that's breath, whether that's noise, whether that's things I'm seeing, like, I'm so used to this carpet at this point. And like every, well, like the wood grain of a certain temple I sat at is ingrained in my mind after a 7-year retreat. I cannot forget the wood grain. And like there are all these options for objects of focus. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And something I've come back to over time is the breath is so strange and elusive, and it's such a great, I'll just say it's a great object.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are, but I think the breath particularly, since it's so linked up with our body, that it really brings up this question of, okay, who does this breathing?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can force yourself to breathe a certain way, and it does have an effect on you. You can breathe more deeply, it does slow you down, it does do something to you, but then you're consciously doing it. You also catch yourself like breathing a particular kind of way, and you're like, what is happening there?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like thoughts. The thoughts are just doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You can do stuff with it, but it's also just always there. So this like back and forth between I control my breath and I do not at all control my breath, and the breath just does its own thing. I'm here with it. It has been something that's come up a bit more over time, rather than just like one, two, but I have to start there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember very early on, and it took me a long time to see it, but to recognize like how much I wanted to make the breath something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it has to be a deep breath, or I'm not doing it. Like,
mm-hmm.
If I pay attention just perfectly, I get it.
Yeah.
Never gotten it. Not the thing I thought I was trying to
do
anyway. So it always keeps looping back to what am I trying to get out of this? I'm just here. Why am I forcing anything?
Yeah. You don't need to.
Yeah. So thank you for the reminder about the breath.
Yeah, thank you for sharing so much.
Thanks.
The other thing you're talking about, a teaching from the breath and all these, quote, objects, which appear separate, is intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're intimate with the wood grain or the carpet, you then develop a kind of oneness with it. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to be intimate with things and people, too. Right? What is that call online? Teacher, why is it that intimacy feels like enmity? You know? but to really be close. And so the breath is teaching us, like, you know, it's teaching you our grasping habits, but also it teaches us liberation. I'm a slow learner, though, I will say. Took me a long time to realize my breath was teaching me. So thank you, Howard. And I see that Karen in Las Cruces, New Mexico, has an offering.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for all you shared today, Hogetsu. I really liked all the different things that you talked about, and Ama. The poem reminded me of something. I believe you mentioned in the poem about making friends with the wind. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of something that I did. You know, our breath is like the wind. And but I remember I needed at one point in my life to make friends with the wind. And what I did was I got in a kayak and I paddled out to the middle of a lake. And then I just put the paddles in the kayak and let the wind take me. I closed my eyes and just felt the wind and let it, like with no fear, right? Just let it be. And it was a really awesome experience. So, you know, but I had to make friends with the wind and it's like the breath, you know, it's not, it's my friend until it's not there anymore, like you were saying, you know. And I like the haiku because it reminded me of impermanence. Mm-hmm. Because it said moment by moment, I forget what it said now, but it really made a lot of sense, you know, and moment by moment. And impermanence is always there, and you know, grasping is not going to work, right, because of impermanence. And so I, you know, I find that I have a lot of gratitude today for just, you know, what I have, that I have my breath, you know, and that I understand a lot of things that you teach us, you know, about Buddhism and things I read and so on. So I find myself in a lot of gratitude today. So thank you.
Thank you. Your gratitude is infectious. And you brought up intimacy with your kayak. Like you knew, like, oh, let me see, what is it like to be intimate with the wind? You know, the poems, the waves of life wash me away. So in setting down your paddle, you kind of set down the ego a little bit and you could meet the wind and be intimate with it. And then maybe you sort of like, maybe I better start paddling because I'm going over a rapid. But, you know, so you know, we're present and responsive. So thank you, Karen, for sharing that. Anyone else like to comment at this point? I don't see anyone online. I think this might be a good time for us to end so I don't drone on forever. And we have more Zazen to do in Sesshin. And I want to thank everyone for breathing together, for your deep practice together in these times. And may our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates. judgment to them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.